Welcome. Storytellers and Changemakers with Emebasi is a podcast that explores the stories and strategies of successful founders, experts, and changemakers. In each episode, we'll be diving into the world of online entrepreneurship, where people are creating businesses and programs that change the way we live, work, and play. And here is your host, Emebasi.
Welcome to Storytellers and Changemakers podcast, the podcast where we explore the stories and strategies of changemakers who change the way we live, work, and play. And today we have Neil Stafford with us. Thank you so much for joining us, Neil Stafford.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invite.
So Neil is the founder and creator of the Training Vault and the new Smarter Way for Online Business. Neil made his first sale online back in May 1998, which is like, I don't know,
25 years ago this month. Now, that I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember the exact date. That's the unfortunate thing, but it was May 1998.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, 25. So happy birthday, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, these grey hairs are not for nothing, you know.
Oh, there's nothing like the first sale. The first sale just sort of changes everything.
Yeah.
Especially with someone that doesn't know who you are. Anyway, so back to Neil's bio. He launched his first online membership site in 2003, and started helping and training other ambitious entrepreneurs in December 2000. As well as his own online sales, he's helped thousands of entrepreneurs around the world sell millions of dollars of their products, programs, and services. And we are so privileged to have you today. I actually took one of, or maybe two, I don't know, of his courses. And through that, got to know Neil, had one or two calls with him.
Yeah.
Once I started planning this, I was like, oh, we really, really have to. I love the way that he explains, simplifies, let's put it, the process of all the different things that we need to do to get clients to run the business, to run our businesses and all. And his specialty is memberships. And so he's helped membership site owners, memberships of all shapes and sizes, from all over the world, you know, over the years. So, welcome.
Great. Yeah, good to be here. Yeah, 25 years. Yeah, it's a long time selling online.
The other day when we spoke, I was somewhere in Liverpool Street, and you said to me, oh, that's near where I used to work.
Yes.
So you were in corporate world, in the corporate
world. I was, yeah. I worked for part of the Bank of Scotland for many years, so I'm in the north of England, so I was based in Chester and Manchester, and then I spent a lot of time up in Edinburgh and Glasgow for the bank, and then I used to travel down on either a Sunday night or a Monday morning to London, and then stay there Monday to Thursday, and then travel back. So I know Liverpool Street, well, I did know it, I've no doubt it's changed a lot, but I did know it.
Not much, yeah. Just the well, I think,
yeah. Yeah, and we used to play five-a-side football just round the corner from it, so...
Okay, so it has changed, because I don't think there's anywhere anybody can play football.
Oh, it's outside. It's just, I think it's still there, like a little courtyard area. I think we used to play there. Yeah.
Or maybe it's the place they've made into restaurants. Anyway, so you were in the corporate world. I mean, I'm a Nigerian. A Nigerian would ask you, why in the world would you leave a nice, cushy job in a bank to go and do whatever?
Yeah.
Over the years, and this is just, you know, being philosophical, over the years we've been so conditioned to think that security,
yes,
you know, that it's hard for us to imagine somebody having something and saying, I want to go into this other thing. So what would you say drove you?
Yeah, to do that. So it's interesting. You're not the only person to say that. Even back then, you know, it was like, why on earth are you doing that? Why are you leaving a safe and secure, great career? We looked after the joint ventures and partnerships for the bank, so we sat on the boards, etc. But it all stems back from about 14 or 15 years old. My uncle, who was quite high up in BP, Vice President of Europe, etc. He always said to me, have a plan B, just a little bit of a plan B. So back in the early days, it was obviously paper round at school, and then it was Saturday jobs, and I did a lot of DJing, so I DJed up and down the country and abroad in nightclubs. So that was always a plan B, something I enjoyed.
That's another conversation
for another day. But mid-90s, this internet thing came along, so I started having a look at it. And it was, if you remember, it's a time that web designers were being paid an absolute fortune to design, you know, 1, 2, and 3 paid sites. So I thought, I can do that. So I still remember it to this day. I went to the local computer shop, and he's only just retired and closed down. So this is the mid-90s. And I said, I want to build websites. And he said, you need Dreamweaver. I said, I'll have it. Yeah. How much is it? He went, £300. I was like, oh, my word, back then. But the DJ money paid for.
Oh, that's like £1,000 now. So
it was a lot of.
I do remember people talk about Dreamweaver. So Dreamweaver was what you used to build websites.
Correct.
Software.
Yeah. So then I went to the WH Smiths in Wigan and said, "Right, I'll buy a book." And it was the forerunner to the Dummy series. It's the Idiot's Guide to HTML. So I got this software and I got this book and I went home and I was trying to play around and build a website. I'm not technical by any stretch of the imagination. And I just found it hard just to, without a goal in mind. So my wife at the time ran Girl Guides and they wanted a website for the weekend. They were going away. So I was like, I'll build it. God, it was hard work. In the end, long story short, managed to put it together. It looked horrible. It had tables and frames, if anybody's old enough to remember them. And it cemented in my mind that I didn't want to build websites, no matter how much people were being paid. Right. But what it put off a spark that I could put something from my computer and put it up online and people could go and visit it. And I thought, you know, there's something here. So I never dismissed it and said, I don't want anything to do with the internet. It was like, I don't want to build websites, but I can put simple pages up. And my plan B from, you know, DJing days, I also got dabbled in mail order info products. So long story short, a friend of mine, this is where the first sale came from. A friend of mine was an artist, but he was quite shy. He used to go to craft fairs at weekends, etc. So I used to go with him, keep him company and just talk to people. And they wanted to buy a painting from him. And I'd bring them over. Then one day this lady said to me, said, can he do, like my friend, can he do a painting from a photograph? And I just went, yes. I had no idea whether he could. And I just went, yes, we can, and took a deposit. And yes. Paul was his name. Said, Paul, can you do this? Yes. He said, no problem.
Cake decorating. At the end of, I ran a 3-week class. And at the end of the class, I'll say to my students, I'll be like, if anybody comes to you and says, can you make me a cake in like the Eiffel Tower or a dinosaur cake, anything, the same, always say yes.
Yes.
Just say yes, and then you go
and then figure it out.
Yeah.
So with this developed paintings and photographs, we developed that, and then we started placing adverts in magazines. So a lot of it was pet and horse and hound and babies, etc., and family portraits. And what we used to do is get somebody to ring up and then send out an information pack, and then they'd send the photograph with the deposit. So this sort of coincided with this internet thing that was taking off at the time. So I said to Paul, rather than have somebody ring in and have to leave a message if we're not there, why don't we send somebody to an online brochure? You know, I'm sure I can do that. So we put this site together. Again, it was a horrible looking site. Remember, there's no digital photography. So we had to photograph his paintings, scan them. Scanners were coming in, scan them.
I'm just thinking that it's not only that there was no or very little of the tech thing that you needed to do. There was no people as well. So it's not like today where you can just Google something and there's somebody done it before. So there's no people as well to even say, I'm trying to do this thing. You know how it is, you'd be like, okay, you do something, get stuck, and you're like, you just quickly just Google it. Oh, how to move A to B, and then you find someone that... So there was no people
None of that. With magazines, there were some magazines out, so we had to go and buy magazines. You know, remember the magazine, you're probably not old enough, Emmy, but there was magazines with CDs on the front that you could go and buy.
That was maybe tutorials or something like that.
That's it, yeah. So we put this site up. Oh, it was hard work because, again, brand new, didn't really know that, you know, you can't just upload an image. Remember, this was dial-up as well, dial-up.
Oh,
it wasn't broadband, it was a lot of dial-up. So massive files, so we had to learn how to reduce them. And I used GeoCities, which is like free web hosting.
Yeah, yeah,
so the URL we had was something like geocities.com/squiggly line 73645. But it was a horrible looking domain. So, you know, I called me and Paul dumb and dumber because we didn't know any better. We just thought we'd do it. So we put this horrible looking website together with a horrible looking domain and put the advert in the magazine. And there was a lead time with magazines and it was like 6 weeks. So we had to wait 6 weeks for the magazine to come out.
They will see the adverts in the magazine.
Yeah.
Then they will visit the website with the long URL.
It. Yeah. So imagine this. This person had to go to the newsagents, buy the magazine, sit down with his cup of tea or coffee, start reading it. It was classified adverts at the back. Read this advert, then go to his computer. Remember, late 90s. Switch it on. Wait for it to warm up. Dial up.
Coffee while he's waiting.
Yeah. And then look at this horrible looking website, wait for all the images to load. And then remember, we couldn't take credit cards online. So I had an order form, which they had to print out. So this guy, it was a guy who ordered, had to print out the order form, fill it out, write all the details in, get a check, fill in the check details, get an envelope, put the address details on, get a stamp and walk down and post it. Imagine asking somebody to do that today.
That's the thing. You know, like I was talking with Nicola. We were talking about Nicola not long ago. And Nicola is one of our speakers at the Freelancer to see CEO Virtual Summit, which Neil is also one of our speakers. And I was telling her about how it drives me crazy when people create too much friction to say, fill this form, then come back and, you know, it really, really drives me up the wall, you know. So so now I'm trying to imagine somebody going through all that. But you still made your sale.
That's it. So that's what I say. So it landed in May. I wish I could remember the actual date and I can't. So I knew it was May 1998. And the envelope popped through the door, the other house where we were living.
There was a check.
And there was a check for £95. That's what we charged for this painting. And the painting he wanted a reproduction photograph of, you know, he sent the photograph. It was a reproduction of Van Gogh's Starry Night. I can tell you that one.
I was watching one of your things. Actually, was at the beginning, and I just remember that you said Van Gogh, you know,
Starry Night. Now the interesting thing is, we didn't think anything about copyright and royalties back then. But as an aside, there is no copyright on Van Gogh's paintings because they're now in the public domain.
So you're not in trouble.
Yeah, so that was the first sale driven by online. So we didn't take it online as such. It wasn't credit cards, but it was driven online. Again, that's another tipping point. That was this could work. You know what I mean? So it's those little, there's certain things in your business journey, even today, with first sale, you know, first 1,000 a month, first 10, first 100 a month, 1,000, whatever. They're all tipping points where your brain goes, yes, I can do this, or yes, where can we take this?
I understand what you mean. I mean, well, for me, this virtual summit that I'm running is, for me, a tipping point as well, you know,
because
I push myself further than I would have normally.
So that then turned into my plan B. So still DJing.
Okay.
Not working in, you know, Saturday jobs anymore. Had a great career.
I see. So you were kind of like dabbling while you were still doing, you know, your
corporate life. And then the internet thing, you know, took off a bit further. We had our first membership site in 2003, and I left the bank in 2004, I think it was, end of 2004-05. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is we were reaching a point where the part-time internet business wasn't quite making as much as what I was earning at the bank with, you know, nice salary and bonuses and, you know, all the benefits that go with it. But I was doing that in a restricted time amount. And as I said, Karen and I love to travel. And I had generous holidays. I had over 30 days holiday, but you know, you can soon eat them up if you like to travel. So we made the decision, listen, if I left, what could we cut back on if we had to? And if I'm doing this much, so we were doing around about £10,000 a month at the time. Sounds a lot, but remember that was gross. And you know, there's VAT in that, there's tax in that, there's costs in that. So that didn't quite equate my salary, which I was getting at the bank. But I said, we're doing it in a restricted time amount. I'll have a lot more time. Where could we take it? And people, like you said, why would you leave a corporate job? People called me brave. And I said, I'm not brave. Brave are people who leave a job on a Friday and open shop doors or brand new business on a Monday. We had a proven model. It wasn't, will it work? It was, how big could we take it? So when people said, oh, you're brave, you're crackers, you're daft, you know, you're stupid, and some other choice words, it wasn't exactly starting from scratch.
There's that thing, you know, where people say, oh, you know, just kind of like burn the bridges, you know, and so that you can go back, and then people get inspired by that and quit their job. They have no plan, they have no system, they have no, you know, nothing, you know, just a hope and a dream. So make it, you know, they're like, Lee, don't worry, you build the, what's that thing? Lee, you know, and you build the parachute on the way down.
Yeah.
Or something like that. You know, well, which sounds really nice when it has a music background and a nice picture, but when it's happening to you, it's not fun. I'm not saying that it's not possible, but
it's very possible. But why put yourself under that pressure? You know, if you have an income that's putting food on the table and doing the basics, you know, it is still very possible. In fact, it's easier today to do a side hustle, you know, to start part time. I was finding extra hours. We had no children at the time. I know it's very different with children. We got children now. But I was fine. I'd get up earlier. I actually made phone calls, sat in my car at lunchtime. I'd go out, you know, with customers and stuff like that. So I just did that. And I worked evenings. Now, I did a lot of traveling with the bank, so on the train and the plane. So that did help. I could do stuff in airports and on trains. Okay, so I just snatched time when I could.
So that means that you were a very focused, I'm not trying to like make you like a special snowflake, but I think you were somebody that was very, very focused. You knew what you were doing or where you were going.
I'm also the world's best procrastinator. I can do that. You know, I can put things off as a champion, but when you're working towards something that you enjoy, that's the thing. You've got to enjoy what you're doing, and when you're enjoying it's, you know, if you enjoy it, it's not work. No, it's still work, but you enjoy doing it. And I think I knew what I wanted to do, and I was enjoying what I was doing. If I found it a chore or didn't like it, I know my trait would be to put it off. So I think if you find something you enjoy, you'll do more towards it.
Okay, so now, one thing that I noticed about you, and one thing that everybody should know about you, is that I don't know how to explain. You have a niche where you help people with their membership site. So membership is what you are known for, most known for. But then you have this wide, very broad collection of knowledge that you found a way to bring together, you know,
correct,
kind of like, you know, because if you ask Neil about email marketing, he's the guy. If you ask him about client acquisition, he's the guy, you know, but then you still need. So how did you, is it just because you've been in the space for a long time, or did you do it intentionally to say, okay?
Yeah, interesting. So our first membership site was for parents who coach and run junior football, soccer teams, football teams. So it wasn't everyone who teaches soccer. It wasn't for professional coaches. It was for parents who get volunteered at the weekend. So that was our niche in the membership site. That was a very successful business. Yeah, we sold that. I sold it back end of 2021. But then that enabled us to start another membership site in another area and another area. And at that time is when people started saying, can you help us? Can you show us? Can you train us? So we started the business of, back then, the Internet Marketing Review. It started as a printed newsletter and mushroomed into a big training business, helping info marketers, people who have information products and membership sites. And I did that for a very long time. and then looked at different areas and looked at helping people start an info business, then grow an info business. But my favorite and most enjoyable part has always been working with people with membership sites and subscription programs. So that's where we've niched down. Now, the time in the market, you know, 25 years experience does get you a lot of experience in different parts of the online business world. So with membership sites, I tailor it to people who've got membership sites. I still run a membership site to this day. I use that as my own testing ground and development, which I can use. So I can say to clients, I'm still doing it, still got the problems you have, still experiencing the pain points, and this is what I found. But for example, we've taken the knowledge we have and put it into other businesses and invested in, you know, traditional businesses, and then just taken our marketing knowledge into them. The world that in our world, as I say, the online world, it's membership sites and subscription programs, but we have either investments or controlling interests in several other businesses where we take the knowledge that we've got of client, you know, client attraction, client acquisition, prospects, customers, upsells, downsells, cross sells, you know, etc. We can put them into other businesses.
Okay. What do you see today when you look at the online space with the eyes of somebody who's been around for a long time? Are you a bit jaded, or do you see opportunity? What do you see when you look at it, you know, from a
still massive opportunity. And at the time we're recording this, you know, AI is the buzzword. And it's really interesting that, you know, it's a new technological advancement. Well, in 25 years, there's been a lot of technological advancements. And, you know, you've got the doomsayers, it's the end of humanity. And you've got the people who, you know, everything's unicorn and roses. My view is we'll end up somewhere in the middle with it. You know, it's another tool that we can use, but it's a technological tool we can use in our business. What I do see, especially in the online space, is connection, personality, or connection with a business, with a mission, with a reason for doing something. They're the ones that are going to thrive. Those who've got, you know, I'll use the word community, but not just a group, you know, where the customers, clients, prospects feel connected to the business or the person, the mission, what they stand for, what they stand against. I think that's always been important. It's the way we've done business. But I think today, the next 5 or 10 years, those who've got...
It's like people are coming back to relationships, back to more of the human touch.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, we've had web businesses in the past where it's just been selling a product. You know, there's been no person behind it. And over the years, the businesses where they've had a personality or a community are the ones that always do better.
Really?
Yeah.
And at least you have the, we know it's in theory, but you have the, you've seen it.
Like, yes. In real life. Yeah. I think I'm excited for the future. You know, after 25 years, it's still exciting. With new developments brings new opportunity. You know, I always say, I'll follow somebody who's smarter than me. So, you know, I'm in a couple of groups which have got some really clever people looking at AI, and it just blows my mind what they're doing. But I'll let them do the work and research, and I'll learn from them, and I will then bring in what I can use in our business. I think it's great for research.
What applies to you.
Yeah, it's great for research, great for ideas, great for a starting point. That's the way we're using it at the moment.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Neil. I think we could probably go on and on.
Sorry, I'll shut up.
I should shut up. You are speaking for us at the Freelancer to CEO Virtual Summit.
Yes, looking forward to it.
Yes, so can you just give us a sneak peek? What do you have for us?
Yeah, I'm going to cover three, how to generate leads and turn them into clients consistently. So, you know, there are people who teach that as their main business. You know, we don't have a program where I'll show you how to, you know, take you through getting leads and getting clients, but it's what we do all the time. So I'm going to show you how we generate or look at a problem. So the problem might be, I can't attract the leads. A problem might be, I can't convert them into happy paying clients. And I can't keep them for longer. So I'm going to break down a system which we use to find out the three areas you're struggling with, because most businesses have three main areas, sometimes four, but mainly three. And then I'm going to break down the what you need to look at in each of those three areas so you can attract your perfect prospects. You can connect with them so they start to see you as the person or the business to do, you know, to do the work with, and then how to convert them into happy paying clients as well. So get ready to have a pen and paper or something you can make notes. You know, I'm very visual. I like using whiteboards.
Neil he teaches in a visual way, so it makes it very, very practical. It's not just theory. So
yes,
you might know something in theory, but when you listen to him, you will know what to do, and you know what to do next. You know what's missing and what you need to learn. You can actually apply it to your business, because everybody's business is different. Everybody's in a different stage of their journey and everything. But that's why you're here.
Yeah. And so hopefully people will deep dive. Yeah, we'll deep dive on a couple of areas in the time that we've got, so people can take away that and go, right, I'm going to put that into my business.
All right, then. So thank you so much for joining us, Neil Stafford. You can find him at...
Best place is either the trainingvault.com, especially if you've got a membership site or a subscription program, or you've got any questions from this podcast, or when you see me on the Freelancer to CEO Summit, then feel free to reach out at thetrainingvault.com.
Awesome. I mean, Neil is one of those people, you're like, I feel, I've said this many times today, I feel lucky, because it was so random how I came across your thing. And he's one of those people that you would say to yourself, how come I've not known this guy all this time? So you are in for a treat. So thank you very much. And
my pleasure.
And here. Yeah, thank you. And bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Storytellers and Changemakers podcast with Emma Bassi. If you enjoyed the episode, please take a minute and leave us a review. It would really help us. For show notes and links mentioned in this episode, visit emmabassi.com/podcast. Thanks, and see you on the next episode, where we hear more stories and strategies from amazing storytellers and changemakers.